Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. Also, if you're listening to this podcast, you are listening in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you can find in the most efficient way, just go into iTunes and enter Warman Kickfighting Show into your iTunes search engine. The show pops right up. Or enter Lord Gaul. It was my username when I first fell in love with kickboxing and Muay Thai, back when I was on K1 Fans, K1 USA, Kakatugi, all those sites that really, the fight forums that really introduced me to the sport. One of the people that I got introduced to on those forums, who I first heard about, really giving us a lot of news from the international Muay Thai scene, but more the Thai Muay Thai scene, letting us know what's going on in the stadiums, is Rob Cox. Rob, introduce yourself to the people and tell them what your Twitter handle is.
Hi everyone, my name is Rob Cox. I've been living in Thailand for about 14 years now, but I've had a love affair for Muay Thai for 29 years now. I've been involved in coming to Thailand for about the last 25 years, so I'm involved in kind of journalism in different ways, and Muay Thai photography, commentary. You can find me on Twitter at ROBBKK at Rob Bangkok, where I put a lot of results in that from the stadiums as well there.
Cool. Definitely follow Rob on Twitter. So we'll jump right into it, Rob. You have been around Muay Thai for a long time, like you said. As we review the 2015 year in Full Rules Muay Thai, what's going on in the stadiums, how would you compare it to other years? And most importantly, how would you compare it to, again, we don't want to go back to the golden age because it's just a different era. But what would you say, you know, top to bottom, how do you feel about the year in Muay Thai there?
It's kind of been an interesting year in it's kind of a real contrast in fortunes in recent year, in the recent last 2 years in between Lumpini and Ratchaman. That's probably been the main kind of sort of standout, really. Whereas Ratchaman for a long time was kind of struggling in the shadows of Lumpini, with where the old Lumpini was, the location, big crowds of tourists. It's kind of it's moved very much towards getting an income from the tourists as well. So the old Lumpini Stadium always had the edge, but since it's moved, they've really kind of seen a reversal in fortune, and Ratchaman Stadium's kind of come alive again. And they're getting the big crowds now. Lumpini's have really, to be fair, been struggling for a while now since they've opened the new stadium. It's kind of sad to see, but it was kind of expected a little bit with the location it's in, you know.
Yeah, we talked about that once before, how they moved out of the city, and it's a little bit tougher to get to.
It's not tougher to get to. It's probably a fair way to say it.
For sure. So I'll go. A few weeks ago, Raja had a show, and I remember a friend of mine, he said, did you see the Raja show a couple weeks ago? And I was in, you know, I prepare mixed martial artists and Muay Thai fighters and kickboxers, and I was doing a mixed martial arts event that week in the UFC. I said, no, I didn't get a chance to see it. And he said, it was like a throwback. It's like a show from a long time ago. Then I checked it out, and I'm seeing there's stoppages and there's all kind of stuff. How did you feel about that show a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, that was that the Ratchaman birthday show, I think? Sixan versus Sangmani.
Yes.
And Anchai. Yeah, it was great. You know, there was some, there was a few KOs, as you said. There's a few, I mean, the main thing with the Thais, they like to see close fights. They like to see the fights going backwards and forwards. You know, one minute one's in front, then the red, blue gets in front, because they like to be able to gamble on it, you know. But for the Westerners, something, you know, you kind of, in the West, you're kind of expecting to see more kind of sometimes fights where there's a clear winner before the fight. You don't normally get that in Thailand, but which is always good, you know. And on that show, there was quite a few fights that were very close and, you know, went to the wire, which is also always good to see. But yeah, it was a massive crowd as well. And like you say, there was a couple of real thrillers as well on there, you know. The only downside for me really was the main event. I mean, it wasn't that much of a downside. It was a fantastic performance from Sangmani.
Yeah.
I'm a big Sexton fan. You know, he's one of those fighters that just always gives 100%. He's never been in a dull fight. You know, and just to see him kind of outclass a little bit like that was probably not the highlight for me. You know, I like to see I like to see the close fights, and I don't like to see fighters like that, you know, get outclassed. But it was a brilliant performance.
Yes.
Same, you know.
Well, let's go ahead and go. Let's go into Saxon a little bit. He was named, you know, Fighter of the Year, I'm pretty sure, by both stadiums.
By Lupini, he was Fighter of the Year at Ratchaman, and he was Fighter of the Year by the Sports Authority of Thailand.
Okay.
Which is probably kind of the second biggest award that they give out in Thailand.
For sure. So let's go ahead and go into him a little bit. Well, as you were mentioning before, he was my favorite fighter. My two favorite guys to watch this past year. I always like watching Sprinter, and I always like watching Sexton. For those of you, you know, give people a rundown of how awesome. I mean, this guy brings the violence, if you will. He comes forward. Yeah. He is a very aggressive guy. As a person who's watched him live several times, what could you tell the people about Sexton and what he brings to the table?
Well, his nickname, they say in Thai, Khon Mayom Krai, is the man who yields to no man. That's his kind of nickname, and that's kind of like his style. You know, he won't give up, he won't stop going forward, and, you know, he's just been in some of the craziest fights over the last few years. I think he's won Fight of the Year several times, you know, at Ratchaman, at Lumpini. His fight with Pak On was one of those fights that, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, you know. Mm-hmm. He's not the most prettiest fighter to watch, but he's you know, he gives everything, you know, and he's the kind of fighter that can stop, finish a fight in one shot if he catches you right, and he just wear you down with an accumulation of shots, but he just takes so much back himself. You know, he's got incredible heart and ability to soak up shots and punishment as well. But as well as that, what I like about him, he's an absolute gentleman as well. He's one of those, you know, kind of in the ring, he's an animal, but outside or when the fight's over, he's the most polite person you'll ever meet. He's first thing you do, you go over and he'll not only away his opponent, he'll go, put his head out of the ring, and he'll wire his opponent's supporters as well, you know, to sort of show his respect to them as well. You know what I mean? He's just a class act, really. In every way, you know.
For sure. So I'll go ahead and talk about another guy who won the Riders Fight of the Year. He had won it because of his streak, and I'm going to talk about Pompeyok. I have a question about him. Same thing. I thought he had a pretty good year, and then he also had a tough night the other day when Thanachai stopped him with a pretty good barrage there. What are your thoughts on just he's another guy who, you know, still had a good year, but kind of came to that kind of abrupt, you know, a really tough day there at the Raja Stadium. What are your thoughts on him, you know, moving forward, and what are your thoughts on this past year?
I mean, it's two Pampiaks, don't forget. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he's not the one that won the Fire of the Year.
No, he's the smaller guy. Sorry about that. That's my mistake. The tall, lean guy is the one that won Fight of the Year.
That's right. Pampiak Chipmanar. That was Pampiak Sitchatik. I mean, he had a very strong year. I mean, a lot of people had him as, the gamblers had him as favourite when he got knocked out. He was actually ahead at that point. But it was one of those shots, you know. He hurt Thanachai the round before. You saw him, he caught him with an elbow. And
yes.
He kind of dropped Thanachai with a flash knockdown. There was no count. And I think he just thought, you know, I can get him with the elbows here, and he just got careless, got hit with a hard counter, and just never really recovered after that. But he'll be back. He's very strong, very tough fighter to beat.
For sure.
And he'll definitely be back from that, I think.
For sure. And then I believe Pompeyok beat Gonar that night, correct? The taller one, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, he beat him not that same night. I think it was the week before.
Okay.
If I remember.
That was Lumpini. It was Lumpini. Lumpini.
Lumpini's featherweight title.
Yes. So going back to him, sorry about that. I confused my notes a little bit.
It's very easy to do in Thailand, but there's so many fighters that have the same name. You know, it can get very confusing at times.
Okay. So I do have a question about him. Sexton as well, because he's got that style. This past year, we've seen a lot of guys, and I'm a big fan of the stadium guys going out and fighting international. And the reason why I like it, because I think some people don't appreciate how good they are until they see them fight someone else. So when they're in the stadiums, they almost see it as kind of like this niche thing in Thailand. But like when these guys go out there, and then you see a Liam Harrison, who's a really good fighter, take on an elite guy, and you see him, you really see how good these guys are. I think it shows well. Do you think that Saxon could be that type of guy? Does he? I mean, the management's going to be the thing that makes it happen. But do you see fighters right now who are fighting in the stadiums that could have, you know, not just success, but they could be beloved? Like, Sanchai is beloved all over the world. Do you think that they could have that kind of feel?
I think they're matched properly. I mean, the only problem with someone like Saxon is he's, you know, his weight. He's, you know, is he going to fight without having to give up a lot of weight, you know? And the danger with someone like Saxon, though, is that he can end up like Anahuac a little bit. You know, he fights huge guys where his power doesn't quite have the same effect, and he's maybe not got the same technical skills as Sanchai to be able to outclass the guys, if you know what I mean. But, I mean, he'd be great, you know, if he... they can find him enough opponents. Saxon, if he was a bigger weight, if he was at 67, 70 kilos, then yeah, I think he'd blow up, you know. But I think with his weight, that's the only problem for him. I have heard rumours, though, that, or I have heard talk that these people have been in talks with Kunlun. So whether that comes off, that might be more interesting, because obviously there's a lot of guys around his weight more in China, you know, that you can fight.
Were you surprised at all? Like, Pech Bunshu's gone out international, and he's had mixed success on the international. Again, he's given up weight, but were you surprised by that? I mean, he's known as, you know, really strong. He's not one of my favorite guys to watch, if I'm going to be honest. You know, as far as, you know, he plays in the clinch, he plays that kind of strong game, whatever. Even as a clinch guy, there are clinch guys that I like better than him. But he hasn't had the success in the international scene. Is that surprising to you at all, or do you just feel like he's going against two bigger guys?
Not particularly surprising. I mean, you've got to remember that, you know, the way that the fights are scored now in the stadiums is very, very different to the way that they're scored in the West. Even in England, where they kind of try and score it as close to the stadiums as they can, it's still, you know, when you take out the factor of the gambling and the different sort of things there, with like, you know, say, like, they got a thing called NASA, which is where... you know, a certain fighter perceived to be that much stronger than the opponent due to his gym and other factors. And, you know, that makes it easier for him to win, if you know what I mean. So for me, I don't think that's so surprising, to be honest, you know, because the way he fights, you know, the whole kind of like wait till the fourth round, smother people in the clinch, and it just uses strength. I think Hedmanchu's always had that advantage in Thailand where he's been very good at making weight. So he's had that bit of a size advantage as well over his opponents. Mm-hmm. So he's not overly surprising to me, to be honest. I don't think he's had that style really to cross over to the West. He's come on a bit now. He's changed his style a bit now, though, because he's been doing a lot of amateur boxing. And like you saw in his last fight with Pep Morakot, you know, he's working his hands a lot more then. But, you know, I think he needs to have a major style adaptation, though, before he could really... kind of catch the eye in the West, I think, Pep Bunshu. I think he's got the wrong style for the West.
For sure. Well, I have a question about Jodvicha. Once upon a time, I remember you talking about him. He was like the super kid, 17 years old, pulling off all these upsets. It seems like he's getting bigger, and he's fighting in bigger weight classes, and the success, it's different, because, you know, he almost goes like, he's got that strange clinch where it's almost like a headlock. Yeah. You know, he's got the headlock, and he brings the knees up from that weird position or whatever. He's had mixed reviews at the higher weight class. What do you think moving forward? I remember you mentioning him, you know, he had some gym moves or changes and so. What do you think about him moving forward?
But he's kind of the problem for him now in Thailand is there's not really many, if any, fights for him left. You know, he's that weight. There's not many big guys that can really give him a test in the clinch. And although he lost his last fight in the stadiums to Rick Tevadar, most people thought before, you know, that he'd be a bit too strong for Rick Tevadar, but it didn't work out like that. And, you know, maybe he's where he's at now is at Kem's gym. You know, has he got the right clinching partners there to, you know, when you're got that super strong clinch style, you do need to keep working it, though, in the clinch. You know, those kind of guys... they're not like a Sanchai where you can kind of get away maybe we're not training quite so hard, you know, because the IQ and the skill and the speed carries him through. So he needs to work on it. So maybe that's a factor as well now that in his last loss that maybe he's not got the clinching partners where he is now, or I don't know. But like I say, that's his main problem in Thailand now. He's actual people to give him a fight. You know, he's kind of run out of opponents, really.
What would you say is the state of the, you know, I guess what would be 141 pounds? I'm just trying to put it to some of my viewers or whatever. So we're talking around, you know, the 60, what would that be, 63 kg, something like that. I have a question. That used to be, when I first got into the sport, like 141 pounds used to be a major weight class in Thailand. Yotsenkai, everybody knows Yotsenkai really well. I believe that's where he had his first success and so on. Things have changed for that weight class and then above it. I mean, that's kind of the one that if I do see Westerners, because Westerners are a little bit bigger, that's where I see them kind of campaign and have some success. What are your thoughts on weight classes that are above, you know, 61 kgs? What are your thoughts on those?
They're kind of not very really that popular in Thailand. You know, if you're talking main stadium fights, they're not that popular. You know, the Thais, the gamblers, they don't really want to watch those weights. They kind of they prefer the you know 108 pound up to 127, you know, 130. You know, that's their real bread and butter weight divisions. They like to see the smaller guys, faster. You know, so they're kind of hard to sort of really. Gauge it stadium wise, but it's kind of like those weights, they're popular for, you know, the Thai gym owners like guys at that weight now because there's more opportunities from now, like with fights abroad, and you've got shows like Max Muay Thai and Thai Fight as well, so there's an opportunity for them to make more money easier, you know, on those shows now. So they're kind of that's kind of the market really for those weight divisions.
So what are your thoughts on that? The last time we had you on and we talked about Thai Fight, I told you that when Thai Fight first began, I used to bring it up on my podcast a lot. I thought of it was like a serious show and so on. And then once they went to the ropes on the hands and once the it was like Westerners to the slaughter. You said that last time we talked, you said that the people are kind of picking up on it. They're picking up on, you know, like this is a different, it's not the level that we see in the stadiums. It just kind of showcases. Despite that, it still seems really, really popular.
I don't think it's as popular as it was. Okay. It's still popular. I mean, you can see the level of the shows, you know, whereas before the tournaments, you know, they'd have like 8-man tournaments. Now they've kind of reduced them to 4-man. They still got a very high level. You know, you had Yusef Buginam winning the 72-kilo tournament. He beat Sutsukon, but I don't think they're quite as big as they were. I mean, Max is the one that's really taken over now. Yeah. Max Muay Thai on the Sunday, and they've had a show on the Saturday as well. I mean, that's actually become the most popular televised Muay Thai show in Thailand right now, you know, the Sunday show. It's more popular than Channel 7, believe it or not.
Oh, crazy.
But, it's kind of like their format is similar to Thai fights in the, you know, Thai versus foreigner, but they want it to be more that, you know, everyone's got a chance of winning and you don't know who's going to win before. I mean, some of the recent Thai fight shows, you look at the lineup and you think, well, you could actually write down who's going to win and what round, more or less, you know. In first round knockout, that'll probably go to points, but the Thai will win, you know. And it's kind of, but with Max, it's kind of their show, they're more anything could happen, and they're constantly on the fighters, you know, go forward, throw lots of shots. They just want exciting fights, bonuses, and the fights, you know, on Max, some of the shows, you know, they're just explosive, you know, every fight from start to finish, and they're getting a really big audience now on TV from the Thai viewing audience. It's kind of like it's putting a full stop on what everyone said for a long time, you know, the whole way that the stadium shows with the gambling influence has been pushing the sport, you know, and why the crowds are getting lower and lower, you know, because first two rounds, no one does anything. Round three, they maybe start to fight a little bit. Round four, they'll explode, and boom, by the end of round four, there's a winner already. And then round five, they'll just control the ring, and, you know, it's just like, people are like, oh, don't I want to go and watch people, and then they're only fighting really for one round, whereas Max, they're fighting three rounds right from the off, and it's working, you know, it's what people want to see, exciting fights, you know.
For sure. I definitely like that you said Max Muay Thai's, because when it came out, like, I loved the idea to it. And of course, it had some decent star power. You know, Bukhout fought for it a couple times. And it's just, I like it. I like its brand. It just doesn't get as much, you know, push. I'm glad that you said that people are liking it locally. That's definitely means a lot.
It's starting to get some international. I think they're starting to get it televised overseas now. I think 40 countries as well now. So you know, it's obviously they got moving in the right direction. You know, when they first started, they had they had like Burkow involved, and they had some big sponsors, and they could afford to put on. And then obviously Burkow went, so they kind of lost the sponsor. So they've kind of been rebuilding it, but the owner's like invested a lot of money in it, and he's determined to make it work. And so far, everything they're doing, it seems to be moving in the right direction. But you know, only time will tell, obviously.
For sure. Definitely glad to hear that. So we've got a question. It's a kind of a cultural question so that you could, you know, help some of my viewers understand it. When Bukhout was upset this, you know, earlier this year, and it's Muay Thai, but, you know, they kind of have the rules in the clinch and so on. Yeah. The big thing was he was cut. And when he got cut, he still had – it's probably one of my favorite moments of Bukhout's fights because he came back so strong in that second round.
Yeah.
But the thing that I wanted you to talk to people a little bit about was there is I forget her full name, but I believe it's Sylvie. She's out there, the female fighter. And she was talking about how she was explaining to somebody that Bukhout came back in the second round when she was at like a corner store. And then she said – they were like, no, but Bukhout got cut. And the cut was the most significant thing. Could you explain to people the significance of, you know, I guess it's like, you know, being seen as wounded or how bad they perceive cuts as opposed to the rest of the world. In the West, if you get cut and you keep fighting, they still go off of how you're scored. But they don't really see you as superiorly damaged. They see you as, oh, that fight could affect you in the fight, or that cut could affect you in the fight later.
It's not the whole Muay Thai scoring about it's all about the effect and the shots, you know. And obviously, if someone lands a hard elbow and opens up a cut, and blood starts pouring out. It's obviously effective, isn't it? You know, basically, that's kind of what it really comes down to. You know, the effect of the shot. And you know, obviously, a cut is clearly shown, and those cuts he got as well were quite bad. You know, there was a lot of blood coming out of them, so they were seen as, you know, very effective elbows. You know.
Okay, cool. I was just curious, just because it's something that I noticed a lot of people were wondering about, and the perception in Thailand's different. You know, it's just it's definitely a stronger emphasis on, like you said, what the cut does and so on.
Like, you know, like punches, they don't. Everyone says punches don't score in Muay Thai. They do, but you know, they've got to show effect. You know, so if you're just kind of like spamming a combination of shots, and they're bouncing off the guy's guard, or maybe one or two hitting, but he's still coming forward, he's still hitting you with hard knees. Then the hard knees and the shots, you know, they'll probably be seen as being more effective because they'll have the ability to slow the opponent down more and stop him coming at you. You know, and the same with the cuts. You know, it's. If you're firing in elbows and they're just bouncing off and the opponent's still coming forward, then it's not an effective shot. But you open like a 10-stitch cut, blood's pouring out, and it has an effect on their fight, then it's you know, it's seen as having an effect, you know.
So I have a question about styles and how people adapt to different styles and just the stadium. One thing I always wondered is, how is a Bovi created? You know, like if I look at, like, is it because he's smaller and he goes, I've got to start fighting earlier or else I'm not going to have as much success? And I ask that question because, you know, you got him, you've got Akpricha, you've got these guys who seem like, you know, there's the playing the game, you know, there's the, you know, hopping, you know, front leg, kind of hop and then kind of playing a technical game, kind of like what we saw with Sangmini and Sexon or whatever. To me, that's the game at the highest level. But like, how does a Sexon and a Bovi, how are those guys kind of created? You've been around it. Do you just see like all of a sudden somebody's like super?
To be honest with you, I think they're kind of that's how they are. You know, you'll see from a very from the start when they're in the gym, you know, they have that aggression and you know, that spirit. You know, I mean, I've seen we've had some kids at our gym that have been a bit like that, and you know, you don't really have to force them to go push forward, and do you know what I mean? If you have to force them and they haven't got it, you know,
yeah,
it's it's inherent. It's in their makeup. You know, they. I mean, I don't think, you know. I say that it's a bit of a cliche. They're born with it. I think, you know, things have contributed to them. You know, in their childhood or whatever that make them that way. But you know, I don't think there's a real kind of like any way to really go out there and kind of like just create a Bobby or a Sexton. You know, I think you've got to have that fire inside. You know, that's got to just. It's got to be there already, you know. I don't think you can create that, to be honest.
And the
reason they're going forward, you know, is the power hitters, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, as the rounds go on, the power tends to fade. So, you know, if you are going to get a chance of knocking them out, it's normally, they always say with a puncher, it's like, oh, if a guy's throwing a puncher, oh, it'd be all right. If he makes it first or third round, he'd probably be all right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the rule is that, you know, by the third round, the power just starts to wane a little bit. Then they got that much more chance of staying out of the way. You know,
for sure.
Obviously, it doesn't always happen that way. There's plenty of last round knockouts as well, but.
Yeah,
that's kind of the rule of thumb they use.
For sure, especially with in Anoa in his days, you know, yeah, he's the longer you go.
Always go from the first round.
For sure. The reason why I asked that question is the coaches out there, if they see that, they won't stop it. They won't say, "Well, we need to play a more technical game," or they just say, "You know what? This is special. Let him fight this way."
Yeah. Oh yeah. They'll. You know, if you get someone like that in your gym, they can be a real. They can be a real money spinner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll loot on points, but they'll, you know, if they do get the knockout or they get a run of knockouts, you know, straight away they're in the limelight, you know. It's kind of, Anoa was paid like 150,000 baht, I think, at his prime. He was like the highest paid fighter of his time, you know, but he was losing a lot of fights, but he was still getting that money because the promoter knew, you know, that he would draw in a crowd. So, and you get someone like that in your gym, you think, all right, we're going to build him up straight away because, you know, he could be a big star, you know. They've got that selling point, you know.
So as you look back on this year, do you have a fight or a few fights that you would say, this was my fight of the year, or this was my favorite event, or this was the one that I had the most fun watching?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm 49 now. I've seen so many fights. My memory's starting to rapidly fade, unfortunately. But standout fights for me, I mean, there was... I'm going a bit blank here. I'm trying to think. There was a lot of good fights. I don't think there was any, you know, real standouts. Like, I think it was a year before or 2 years before, you had, like, the Sexton pack on.
Yeah.
And then you had the Paul Kiao versus Ponsonay. I think that was a year before. I don't think there was any particular huge standouts like that this year. There was a lot of very, very good fights, and there always are, but it was more standout performances for me this year. I mean, there was one standout fighter for me this year. There's a young kid now that fights on Songchai Promotions called Kim Sang Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Sang Torlak Song. I mean, this kid's just been unbelievable. In the fight from around 100 pound up to, he's about 106 pound now, but just kind of he's going to be the next big superstar. You know, he didn't lose all year. He's and he was beating guys, you know, like the cream of Thailand at that weight, you know, and he beat everyone, you know, basically just through unnatural strength and grit and determination. He was probably the standout for me for the year, just seeing him fight.
So that would have been your fight of the year.
For me, I'd say just for I mean, Sangman, he was very good, but then he had that shutout loss himself, didn't he, to the Taksin Lek.
Mm-hmm.
But Ginsang Lek for me was the standout for.
Okay, cool. Definitely good stuff on Ginsam Lek. I want to go ahead and wrap it up with a few more questions. Basically, I'm wondering, you know, I watched a lot of the fights and I was going through it. Do you see that kind of stoppages can be trends sometimes? Because I felt like when I watched the fights this year, there were a lot more elbow KOs. Because I always put together like this year of, you know, KO, you know, I was kind of do my fight of the year, or like my highlight that kind of shows like the year of kickboxing and Muay Thai. And notice there's a lot of elbow KOs. Is that just, you know, it happened to come out that way, or is it just it's in vogue right now?
No, I think that's probably just one of those things, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's... I love to see elbow knockouts. I like to see the real clinical elbow guys. There's not so many at the moment. There's a few guys that stand out with their elbows, but I don't think that's a particular trend, to be honest with you.
For sure. Next question around, I mentioned a couple guys, that have kind of moved on, like Singdom, had the opportunity to fight international, and Sam A's been fighting international and so on, whatever. Do you feel like there's starting to be a gap at what would be 135 pounds between 130? Because that to me is usually the strongest weight class. When I look at it, but right now I feel like a lot of those names that I'm used to, that's not as big, and some of the smaller, like under 130 pounds, those are starting to be more popular. Are you noticing that as well?
Yeah, there's a kind of a transition now. A lot of the guys like Singdom, Singdom's getting old now. He's been around a long, long time. He's not the level he was, hasn't been probably for about the last year or so. And there's kind of a bit of a turnaround now. A lot of the older guys are kind of retiring, and it's kind of waiting for the newer guys to kind of come through, maybe in another year or so, you'll have the likes of Pampiak and have grown a bit more, and then that division will look really strong again, But at the moment, there's kind of there isn't the same amount of fighters at that level anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Nong-Old retired, he's gone to Singapore to evolve, and a lot of the guys are all fighting regular, all kind of coming to the sort of twilight really in their career. Sanchai's gone, So I think he's waiting for the new. It's waiting for the newer guys to come through, or that
way. Okay, cool. So my last question would be, internationally, is there anybody out there that you really like to watch right now? And it can be, I know you've got the relationship with England, of course, but like, is there anybody that you're like, I really like watching this guy, and I'm excited about seeing this guy move forward?
Chance to watch the international scene, to be honest. I mean, for me, most of the international guys I get to watch are in Thailand.
Okay.
Youssef, obviously, I always enjoy watching. He, for me, is probably pound for pound the best foreigner out there right now.
Youssef, the Frenchman?
Belgium he's from. He beat Sutakon in the Thai fight finals.
Okay.
Sutakon twice in the second round. There's a lot of very good Japanese fighters now that are fighting in Thailand fairly regularly. I mean, Genji, although he got stopped on the Ratchman and Berthy show. There's another young Japanese kid that fought on the Lumpini Berthy show called Kaito, and he's just won a Thailand title, a low weight, flyweight, I think it was, if I remember right. And he's fighting regularly against some of the very good high level Thai guys, which is always good to see, a foreigner that can compete at the lower weights,
Mm-hmm.
Kaito Wawanchai, his fight name is. But he's one that's always enjoyable to watch. Other than that, I don't really get a chance, to be honest. I mean, I do that much kind of, I'm at the stadium or I'm commentating sort of two or three times a week. So it's kind of, by the time I've done all that, I don't really have the appetite to sit and watch on YouTube, to be honest with you. It sounds a bit sad, really. But
no worries. Kind of,
Muay Thai'd out by the end of the week.
No worries. You're still our go-to guy as far as full rules Muay Thai goes. And it's funny you brought up the thing about Japan, because, I'm a big fan of the female fighter Little Tiger. And she lost her title, I want to say, 2 months ago in Japan. But definitely it's good to hear that, there are some people who are going down there and making the trip. And I do think that we're kind of still in the era of tourists and tourism as far as the full rules Muay Thai scene goes.
Yeah.
I think that's a big bulk of the audience. Go ahead.
There's a real thriving scene with the Japanese now. There's actually, mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, I mean, I didn't openly report it, but there's actually a franchise now. Lumpini Stadium have a Lumpini Stadium Japan franchise now.
Okay.
So there's a lot of few of the Lumpini champions are going to Japan to defend the titles, and there's a lot of Japanese fighting there. They're still probably they're probably the busiest, in the stadiums at a high level now. It would be the Japanese fighters,
Cool, cool. Well, is there anything that you want to promote, anything that you want to tell the people about before we get you out of here? I really appreciate you coming on. So I want to give you this. Yeah, go ahead.
Just the usual, really, just MuayThaiFocus.com. I've been a bit lazy the last year with putting stuff on there. Hopefully I'm going to be able to pull my finger out of it this year and try and get more stuff out to people about the sport. And other than that, just keep on supporting the sport, really.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining me, Rob. And thank you to all the listeners who've been following the podcast. I'll do one more. I'm going to try to do one that focuses on just the women. So I had kickboxing. This is my full rule stadium. This is my Muay Thai one. And I'm going to do just the women. And then I'm going to go ahead and head into the next year and talk about every new show. So thank you. Thank you, all the listeners. God bless everybody. Be safe.